Welcome back to another episode of City Hall Pass. I'm Kapel Lungani, counsel to the mayor of New York City. We created this forum, the first of its kind in New York City, to give you, the public, a unique window into the highest levels of our city government. We interview New York City's finest public servants and get them to open up in a way that is both deeply personal and insightful. And on its best days, we hope that our podcast is equal parts educational and inspiring. And now I want to introduce my two co-hosts today, two brilliant women who inspire me every day, Bess Chu and Kate Coughlin.
Thanks, Kapel. Happy to be here. This is Bess Chu. I'm currently Chief of Staff to the Office of the Counsel to the Mayor.
Hi, I'm Kate Coughlin, and I currently serve as Deputy Counsel for the Office of the Counsel to the Mayor.
I'm excited to introduce our guest for this episode of City Hall Pass, the legendary Clive Davis. Clive Davis is a record producer, A&R executive, music industry executive, and a lawyer. He's won 5 Grammy Awards and was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a non-performer in the year 2000. Davis is credited with signing legendary artists such as Janis Joplin, Santana, Bruce Springsteen, Billy Joel, Whitney Houston, and Barry Manilow, just to name a few. He previously served as the president of Columbia Records and founded successful record labels such as Arista and Jay Records. In 2008, Clive Davis was appointed Chief Creative Officer for all of Sony Music Entertainment, a position in which he still occupies today. Mr. Davis was born and raised in Brooklyn and has never forgotten his roots as a true New Yorker. He's dedicated much of his life to serving his community through numerous humanitarian causes and has been the recipient of honors from organizations such as the T.J. Martell Foundation, the Anti-Defamation League, and the American Cancer Society. More recently, Mr. Davis has been working hand-in-hand with Mayor de Blasio to plan New York City's Homecoming Week, a citywide celebration featuring live concerts, free movie screenings, cultural activities, iconic events including New York City Restaurant Week and Summer Streets, public art, and much more. This 5-borough week of events will culminate in the historic We Love NYC, the Homecoming Concert, produced by New York City, Clive Davis, and Live Nation. The once-in-a-generation concert will be held in the Great Lawn in Central Park on Saturday, August 21st, and will feature such talents as Jennifer Hudson, Paul Simon, Bruce Springsteen, and many more. We spoke to Mr. Davis about his early life growing up in Brooklyn, his fascinating journey in the music industry, and the importance of the homecoming concert as our city recovers from the COVID-19 pandemic. We hope you enjoy.
So, Mr. Davis, you are a living legend. You're a record producer, a music executive, a Grammy Award winner, and a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. It's a really long list. But you're also a New Yorker. You're born and raised in New York, Brooklyn, to be exact. How did living and growing up in the city during such like a golden era of music and entertainment influence your career path?
I've got to tell you, I got into my career by accident. And so there was nothing about really childhood study, education, and that really resulted in why I'm in music. You'd have to start at a different start point because it was purely an accident. I came from a very modest means family. My parents died when I was 18, 19 years old. And I went to live with my sister, who was married with one child in Bayside, Queens. I had a total of $4,000 to my name from the insurance my father had after he paid his loans off. I should add that my father was an electrician, my mother was a housewife, and to rise above the station, so-called, when you're a Jewish boy from Brooklyn, you had two choices. You're either going to become a doctor or you're going to become a lawyer. I never loved the sight of blood. It never occurred to me to be a doctor. And on the other hand, I really was a public speaker and I was officer of my class and my school. So law made itself apparent. That's why I knew nothing about being a lawyer, what you do, why you do it. But it was always known from really kindergarten I was going to be a lawyer. And that's how I got into it.
Something that at least I've always heard about lawyers is that they're bad managers. But you're an amazing manager. You have to manage talent. You have to manage a staff. You have to manage a large team. Were there any skills from law that you took towards that management? Or how did you kind of develop that management skill?
Let me tell you, most of it, because I never thought I'd be in music, I never thought I would be in business. Why I'm indebted to New York as much as I am is because of the education that began at Pierce 161, the education that continued at Erasmus Hall High School. Through my elementary school and high school, I still can diagram any sentence. I still know transitive from intransitive verb. I was acutely made aware of colons, semicolons, spelling. The minimum essentials is what it was called. So I am so grateful for this incredible education that I got from public schools, from Pierce 161 and Erasmus Hall High School. I then proceeded to go to NYU on scholarship. And if I didn't get a B-plus average, I would lose it. So the work ethic, the normal competitive public school education, New York work ethic was even made more intense. There was never a thought to how hard you could work, whether you worked late at night, whether you worked on weekends. All of that I am so indebted to. And the melting pot that New York was, the melting pot that Brooklyn was, the idea that you just mixed with everybody, every race, every color, every creed, you never gave a thought to it. And so what's vivid in my memory is when I was at my law firm, and I'd been there about 3 years, and I was coming out of Harvard Law School. So yes, I was still wearing khaki pants and tweed jackets. And I remember getting this offer out of the blue after 3 years, would I become general counsel for Columbia Records? Wow. I mean, I was married with one child. I was making like $11,000. I could get a huge raise to $25,000. Never occurred to me. I like music. I listened to the radio. I knew the hits of the day, but I had friends that really collected, you know, 45 RPMs, the LPs. I was never a collector. I never saw myself to be in music, but I was leaning towards taking it because I knew that as a lawyer in this highly respected, successful law firm of Rosenman and Colin, that I would only be a service partner. I knew nobody with money that they would allow me to represent as their lawyer. So I was about to take it. When I go to Ralph Colin, one of the two senior partners, his clients was CBS and Bill Paley, Columbia Artist Management, Inc., among others. Samuel Rosenman was the attorney for Franklin Roosevelt. He was the attorney for Harry Truman. Venerable, he came up with the New Deal phrase, the brain trust, highly respected attorney. And I walked into Rob Cohen's office. I told him about the offer. He said, Clive, look at you in your khaki pants. Look at you in your tweed jacket. You come from Harvard. You come from that genteel Cambridge life, the record business, Broadway. They wear gold chains. They're jivey. That's not you. I didn't say it to him, but I walked out. And I said, look, no, I don't consider myself jivey, but I'm much more the streets of New York and Brooklyn growing up. I'm much more the product, if you will, of my environment, my family, my roots. And I'm not going to be put off by that description because I'm glad I understood the atmosphere, the Ivy League atmosphere at Cambridge. I'm not putting it down. But I grew up with no money, and I grew up in a multi-ethnic and racial atmosphere. So again, I'm indebted to New York, but it really influenced my decision. Yes, I am going to go and become general attorney for Columbia Records.
You know, a couple of things that you and I have in common is that we're both New Yorkers. We both, you know, grew up in New York, and that we're both lawyers. And so I had actually in law school interned at Universal Music Group, but now I work here at City Hall for the mayor's office. But I am really curious to know, can you tell us a little bit about how you evolved from being a general counsel, from being a lawyer to becoming a music executive?
A, there was no transition. B, I'll tell you how it happened. I worked real hard. Columbia was expanding. I went with the president, Gottlieb Leibowson, to London to set up the first American London record subsidiary. I went with them to Paris to set up the first American French subsidiary. I worked on all the great original cast albums that Goddard producing and bringing to Columbia. And I would go there opening night, which apparently no one who was a lawyer before me had ever shown up. open tonight. I listened to music. I saw, but those that were A&R people that were doing Tony Bennett, Barbara Streisand, Andy Williams, they were not aware of the rock and roll that was emerging in a strong way. They did have Bob Dylan, but he was a great writer. And his hits at that time were made popular by Peter, Paul, and Mary, and the Byrds, and Joan Baez. Like Simon and Garfunkel had one single that was slowly making its way. Sounds and Silence, their first record. I plunged in, I worked on, Goddard saw that. So as we diversified, as Columbia bought Steinway Piano and bought Leslie Speaker and diversified also with Fender Guitar, there was a big musical instrument division. I never thought I had ears. Goddard never thought, which never think. But he knew that I liked the environment. He knew that I was a hard worker from that Brooklyn, New York work ethic, okay? So when he became a group president, he offered me the head of the musical instruments division because I was the only one at record. Because I had done the contract, I knew the players. But I didn't want to go to La Jolla, California. So I went to the office the next day when he and I were to meet, prepared to say no. When he on his said, Clive, I'm terribly sorry. Regarding the musical instrument group, our executive vice president, Norman Adler, is so eager with his wife, Leona, to move to La Jolla. I'm going to make him the head of the musical instrument group. And you'll become the head of Columbia Records. That is how I got into the record business. So it is by accident. It is by luck. Was I prepared? Not really, but my training was such, and common sense dictated. You learn, you educate yourself, you listen to everything. And then my life changed. And we're talking, I was head of the company for about a year when I went to the Monterey Pop Festival in 1967 because I had my first record that I had made a deal for with the great producer Lou Adler, famous for his work with the Mamas and Papas and Johnny Rivers, among others. And he gave me a record. If you're going to San Francisco, be sure to wear flowers in your hair. And it was number one when the Monterey Pop Festival. And we had to celebrate. So I took my wife and we went to Monterey, not knowing anything other than the entertainment of maybe the Mamas and Papas and Simon and Garfunkel, who would be performing there. But during the day and in the afternoon, new artists would be appearing. And there was a musical revolution going on because the guitars were all electrified. I was the one out of sync. Everybody else was wearing robes or flowers in their hair. And there I was still in my white pants and a tennis sweater. And I got an epiphany when my life changed forever. When I saw then an unknown group called Big Brother and the Holding Company, and their lead singer was Janis Joplin. And when I saw that in the midst of the social and musical revolution going on, I knew that although I never had thought of myself with any music ambition or goal, training, couldn't read music, but every fiber, without being too melodramatic, of my body said, you've got to sign this group. And I felt that way when I saw a group called the Electric Flag with Mike Bloomfield on guitar and Buddy Miles on drum. And that's my story. But then I signed those two. I came back to New York within 2 weeks. Al Cooper, Steve Katz, and Bobby Colombi auditioned Blood, Sweat, and Tears for me. And I was aware of the horns that could make a contemporary group. Maybe borrowed a little from the great Miles Davis, but still dynamic and unique fusion, rock, jazz. I signed Blood, Sweat, and Tears. And when we released these albums, and they exploded, and I was heralding a revolution in contemporary music, it gave me the confidence then to sign on my own Santana in Chicago, Earth, Wind, and Fire. Okay, that's how I got into music deeply, and hired executives that understood this revolution and would help translate it honestly for these great musicians.
So you mentioned when you met Janis Joplin, you knew there was something special about her. And I mean, you've signed so many music legends, including Bruce Springsteen, Billy Joel, Whitney Houston. What do you actually look for in an artist?
Each of those artists is different. In the case of Joplin, even then, with no experience, I had never seen anybody like her. An electrifying, vibrating, white soul sister that we have never seen the likes of again. And that's why they'll do a movie on her life. And that's why she still is the quintessential female rock singer. It was that was unique. In the case of Bruce, it was his lyrics. No one had written lyrics like that. He was a folk singer when I auditioned him, when John Hammond brought him to my office. He was just him and his guitar. But the lyrics, and when his album, that first album, Greetings from Asbury Park, came out, I went on closed circuit television because I didn't want anyone saying, oh, here's another Bob Dylan. That's a kiss of death. And I read, to this day, Bruce and I laugh about it, that video of me reading every lyric of every song on that album so that nobody would confuse him as another anybody. He was Bruce Springsteen, unique. And of course, he and Dylan, Paul Simon, Stevie Wonder, they are the poet laureates of our century, of our lifetime.
Our team and basically all of the city has done a lot of work on this upcoming homecoming week. And, you know, I think everyone's so excited for this event just because people for the last year and a half were separated alone in their homes or alone in their apartments and couldn't get together. And, you know, now there's so much hope with vaccination rates rising, hope by seeing friends and family again and hugging folks for the first time. And really the central part of this homecoming event is the Central Park concert on August 21st. Why did it mean so much to you to be involved in this event?
Firstly, the event itself is inspired by music. That music could be the healing element, the healing for all of us. It was wonderful and is wonderful that music can play such an important role. And the mayor was reaching out for me. I've given not concerts like this, but my Grammy party for each of 45 years. This year, I did it virtually, and I had asked my friend Paul Simon and Bruce and the Alicia Keys and Oprah and Joni Mitchell, and they all responded. So the reaction to my Grammy party this year virtually was so unique and special and so studded with our great artists that I was touched. I was honored, A, that I would get the team of Live Nation, get the team of Doug Davis and Mark Johnston and Patrick Menton and all the others in the city office and the park commission, et cetera, to do this so that it's a challenge and we're all working as hard as we can to provide that concert that becomes unforgettable.
Is there anything you're looking forward most to seeing at homecoming week or experiencing at homecoming week?
I think this concert's going to be great. We've picked individually artists, and to know the New York Philharmonic will open it, all 75 members of the Philharmonic, to know that the Philharmonic will be supporting Bocelli and Jennifer Hudson, and then Ricky Minor with his band come, but every genre music is represented. You won't believe the rap segment. It's unique. No one has ever seen this interchange of iconic great New York rappers led by LL Cool J. The idea of having rock artists like Elvis Costello and The Killers and Patti Smith, and then knowing that Bruce Springsteen will duet with Patti Smith. Just saying it sends chills up me, really. And Maluma, you know, every genre, Broadway, Cynthia Erivo, every genre of music will be represented. It will be thrilling to see Santana with Rob Thomas and White Club. Barry Manilow has a huge audience all over the world. And to know that he's coming in to to perform. I'm excited. I don't want to leave anybody out by any means, but I got to tell you, it's real, real exciting.
We covered a little bit about your work, and you have signed artists of all different genres, which I think is well reflected in the folks coming to Homecoming Week. I know I have one or two favorites that I'm really looking forward to. But looking back, and maybe this is a little bit unfair, but I wanted to know, what is the best concert or your favorite concert that you've ever attended?
You know, when you're comparing and when you know that I've been to see Bruce with these deep bands so many times, Whitney so many times, and Santana, and I can go on and on, Central Park with Simon Garfunkel. The most impactful to my life was Janis Joplin and Big Brother in Monterey, because my life was never the same after that. And it really was a true epiphany. I'll never forget that. And so it changed the rest of my life. And I would have to say that to answer an excruciatingly tough question.
Well, spoken like a true lawyer, you gave a terrific answer.
The legal skills still come in handy, we see. Well, we just want to thank you again, Mr. Davis. It was such a pleasure speaking to you. I know you mentioned you're indebted to New York City, but the city is also really indebted to you for all you've given and how much you've given back. Your creativity and the artists that you've brought up are just truly tremendous. So we do really thank you for your time here.
Thank you.
I want to thank our guest, the inimitable Clive Davis, for taking time to chat with us. Mr. Davis has been instrumental in the planning of Homecoming Week and the Homecoming Concert, and we're incredibly grateful for his decades of contributions to New York City. For more information on Homecoming Week, visit homecoming2021.com. We hope you enjoyed this conversation and look forward to talking to you soon on another episode of City Hall Pass.
This podcast is brought to you by the Office of the Council to the Mayor of New York City.